Okay, it's my great pleasure, and it will be your great pleasure too, to hear Dror Bhanatan from Toronto talk about trees and wheels and balloons and hoops.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. So my talk will follow a handout. I hope you are holding a copy because seeing this is a bit hard. Also, I should say that a word about the overall structure. So like the first generalized 15 minutes, which could last 45, would be I'll tell you about algebra. Then the next generalized 15 minutes, I will be telling you about topology. And then I will tell you about why I care and where it goes and various other things. I don't know how long I will have for that. The very, very basic point is that I will construct a certain algebraic thing which will have operations and relations. And then I will construct a certain topological thing or describe a certain topological thing which will also have operations and relations. And the operations and relations will be the same. And then I will just just define something by one word on the generators, and this will give you a morphism from topology to algebra, except I'll do the algebra first. And that morphism will be an invariant of certain topological things with good composition properties, and then I will tell you why I care about it. Okay? That's the overall scheme. Now, so let's start with the 15 minutes of algebra. So let T be a finite set of what I will call tail labels. And H be another finite set of what I will call head labels. And then I will define M one half of T and H. So that's the algebraic side. So it's one half because it's actually N over N plus one of the information theory content, and 1 over n plus 1 of the difficulty. So I've averaged it out as half the total space. Okay? So half the algebraic part of the story is you take the freely algebra on the alphabet generated by T and raise it to the power h. Okay? So it's h-labeled lists of elements in the freely algebra. So I know you all know what the freely algebra is. Is it true? Should I define the freely algebra? Very briefly.
I can't ever tell whether two monomials are in the same or not.
But if you knew about the Lindon basis, you'd be able to write computer
programs.
Yeah,
right?
It's easy, actually, at the end. But anyway, so basically the freely algebra, the freely algebra is the freely algebra generated by these symbols. So you write all possible linear combinations of bracket, iterated bracket combinations, and you mod out by anti-symmetry and Jacobi, and it obviously has a bracket. Except it's not quite what I want. What I want is, well, this is graded, so this will be a degree 1 element, this will be a degree 3 element, because it involves 3 generators. So I want you to degree complete it. So allow yourself to take infinite sums in which the degree rises. So it's essentially like power series. Okay? So an element in M one half of U and V being the tails, and X and Y being the heads, will be an assignment which to X will assign an element of the freely algebra, so a tree. And to Y will assign an element of the freely algebra, in this particular case a linear combination of trees. And of course, you will have many more such elements. And my convention will be often to drop the x and instead put it at the head of the tree. So the tree is made of directed arrows. These are the tails, and these are the heads, and also, hence also the names. Are you okay with me? Is everything okay? So I told you what m to the 1 half is. And now I have to tell you about a few operations going from m 1 half to m 1 half. So the first operation is what I will call tail multiply. So given a tail U and a tail V, and a tail W, a tail label W, which is actually not among the labels that are already in T, the operation tail multiply is defined as follows. So it takes a sequence of trees like that, a list of trees like that, called lambda to lambda, in which you replace every occurrence of U and every occurrence of V with W. Now, double slash, I should say, is newspeak for function application, to apply a function when it's on the right, and it's also newspeak for composition when you go from left to right instead of the ugly convention of going from right to left. Okay? So, this operation satisfies what I will call meta-associativity, which means if you combine U and V and call the result U, and then combine U and W and call the result U, once again, it's the same as combining V and W and calling the result V, which is and then combining U and V and calling the result U. In both cases, you've combined U, V, and W, and at the end call the result U.
Sorry, I thought W had to be something you haven't.
But you see, this operation is now applied to the output. W is a dummy variable. I mean,
okay,
when I define TM, W should not be in the input.
Okay,
but
okay.
Now I'm applying it in a different context, yes, and W is a different thing. And
I see. Okay. And do you need two inputs or just a collection of inputs?
Well, I mean, this meta-associativity says that you can that you could have extended it to TN, U1, U2, U3, up to
okay.
W. Okay? Okay. Now, I call it meta-associativity and not associativity because it's very much like associativity, but it's not associativity in any algebraic structure, in any group, or algebra, or whatever. Okay. Then there is a second operation called the head multiply. And head multiply sort of tells you that that I'm really thinking of this, really I'm thinking of the freely algebra or the completed freely algebra as representing elements of the free group in some infinitesimal way. So to multiply two elements in the freely algebra, what I do is I use the BCH power series. So I exponentiate each one, multiply, and then take the logarithm. And a standard theorem, not entirely trivial, but still standard, says that this logarithm can be written as a series in the freely algebra. Okay? So, head multiply of head x and head y with output in head in z will be, you take the least lambda, you remove from it x and y, but instead you put a new thing labeled z, which will contain the BCH product of lambda x and lambda y, of the x part of lambda and the y part of lambda. Yes?
So these operations, they're changing your set of tail labels and or head labels.
Yes. They go from one MTH to another MTH in a completely obvious way, how they change. Okay. Now, the BCH formula is associative. I mean, just sort of, well, this expands to that, and that expands to that also. So therefore, the head multiply is also meta-associative. Now, it's not... It's meta-associative because it's actually not even a binary operation. It's an upper operation on a list of things. And what it does is it takes two things in the lists and multiplies them. So the kind of remnant of associativity is that head multiply of x and y into x and then of x and z into x will be the same as what's written here. Okay. So now I kind of have two group operations, or meta-group operations, it's not quite group operations. I have two meta-groups operations, the tail operations and the head operations, but I claim that really one group acts on the other. So let me define the tail by head action, so acting on a tail U by a head X. And this is defined as follows. Well, you apply to lambda what I will call RC of blah, blah, blah. But first I have to define RC. So RC is, well, for that I first have to define C. So CU of minus gamma, if gamma is an element in the freely algebra, CU of minus gamma will be, take anywhere in your expression, wherever you see a u, replace it by u conjugated by the exponential of gamma, or minus gamma. So what it amounts to is to say that you apply e to the minus the adjoint of gamma acting on u. And again, this is just a simple-minded power series. So it's u minus gamma bracket u plus 1/2 gamma bracket u minus 1 over 6, you know, 3 gammas acting on u and so on. Okay? Now, conjugation by gamma, sort of this operation, its inverse, sorry, the operation of conjugation by minus gamma, its inverse is not conjugation by gamma. And in fact, this is related to something that happens in free groups. So if you have the endomorphism of a free group to itself, which is obtained by taking one of the generators and conjugating it by something, the inverse of that is not to conjugate by the opposite thing, by the inverse thing. And the reason is that, so, you know, you've mapped u to g inverse ug, where g was an element in the free group of elements that contain among them u. So g will have a u in it somewhere, might have a u in it somewhere. So now when you try to unconjugate, you'll be unconjugating the u's inside g as well. So the inverse of conjugation by g is not conjugation by g inverse. In fact, as an automorphism of a free group,
what did I do?
Okay, it doesn't matter. No, I'm happy this way. It's actually perhaps better this way. As an operation of conjugation as an automorphism of the free group, it's often not even invertible. However, in the Frehley algebra, if you do the same in the Frehley algebra, it's always invertible. And I will call the inverse of conjugation by negative gamma, I will call it RC of u by gamma. Okay? So the reason for the R is one because it's reverse conjugation, and the other thing is that it's because it's actually repeated conjugation. So to invert conjugation, what you do is you conjugate, and then every u that occurs in the every u that gets created in the output, you conjugate again, and then every u that's created in the output, you conjugate again, and in the Frehley algebra, it's convergent. Okay, so that's what RC is. So the tail by head action of on tail u by head x will be, you look at the Lie element with head x, and you use it to reverse, to repeated conjugate all the u's that occur in lambda. Okay? Now, what property does this have? So, first of all, you can check that conjugation by the product of alpha and beta, well, it's actually not the same as conjugating by alpha and then conjugating by beta, for the same reasons as before. So conjugation by the product of alpha and beta turns out to be the same as conjugating by alpha, to which you've applied reverse conjugation by beta, and then conjugating by beta. So sort of pre-applying reverse conjugation by beta will fix the fact that the beta acts not only on the u, but also on all the u's that appear in the conjugator.
It's like a Kirchhoff.
I don't know, something, yes. Anyway, this property implies a meta-action property. So, it's sort of the meta version of acting on u by x times y is the same as acting on u by x and then acting by y. So, head multiply of x and y into z, so multiplying x and y and then acting by z is the same as acting on u by x, then acting on u by y, then multiply. Similarly, well, group actions have two axioms. One is that if you act by a product, it's the composition of the actions, The other is that if you act on a product, it's like acting on each of the elements. So in other words, acting by x on u times v is the same as acting on x by u and then and multiplying by acting on v by x. Sorry, what did I say? I said it wrong, but what I wrote is correct. Sorry. Anyway, this leads to the, I mean, this has a version in this meta world, and the version is, and the result is tail multiply followed by action is the same as acting, then tail multiply. Okay? So that's half the work. Now, let me tell you about the other half. Okay, I'll do it very briefly. So let the full algebraic space that I want to work with, by the way, it will connect to topology. Sorry, if you're impatient, it will connect to topology. So let the full MTH be the half MTH cross cyclic words on the alphabet T. So a cyclic word on a certain alphabet, well, if the alphabet is an alphabet of colors, then it's bracelets or necklaces, sorry, with beads in these colors. If the alphabet is made of U and V, then a cyclic word looks like a wheel like that, U, V, V, W, V, but sort of I don't care about the order, I mean, you can cyclically permute this. Now let me tell you, remind you, that cyclic words on an alphabet T is the same as cyclic words on the freely algebra generated by T. So basically, if you have a planet with a little prince and several trees planted on top of it, the trees being Lie elements, then the little prince is just a word in the alphabet, and the trees can be reduced using the bracket to elements along the wheel. So it's stated here, if you have a tree along sort of planted on a wheel, you can reduce the tree to, well, the bracket of the two things that appear in it. Okay? So equally well, I could have thought of that as cyclic words on the freely algebra. Again, this is a graded space, and I allow myself a power series. Okay? Now, the operations of before extend to this. So tail multiply just involved collapsing two colors to be one color. So you can do it to cyclic words just as well. Head multiply involves the trees and just doesn't touch the cyclic words part. And tail on head action, well, it extends in two ways. The simplest way, well, tail on head action involved conjugating U by the element colored X. Well, you can still conjugate U even if it's within a cyclic word. You'll just get a combination of trees instead of this U. And you could collapse it to, well, and that was the point of the discussion I had before. Okay? So one way to extend THA is to say that lambda comma omega, so lambda being the, a list of an element of M1 half, and omega being a linear combination of cyclic words, we just go to lambda comma omega on which you act by repeated conjugation. But then the point is that there is another extension. And the other extension involves adding some J spice, which is some spice that you have to add to this business. So let me define the J spice, okay? It's defined as follows. First of all, there is a functional given a label U. There is a functional from trees to cyclic words, and it's called the divergence relative to U. And it's defined as follows. So you take the head of the tree, and you sum over all possible ways of connecting it back to one of the tails, colored U. Only two tails colored with the same color as the head. Sorry, only two tails colored by the color specified, U. Okay? So this is the so-called divergence sub U. And you get things with one loop, but again, things with one loop collapse to cyclic words. And then, so this is somehow the infinitesimal spice. And the global spice is obtained by this funny formula where you take gamma. So gamma here is the tree corresponding to the head x. You apply repeated conjugation to it, but with using S gamma. Then you compute the divergence. Then you integrate. Sorry. Then you apply conjugation, and then you integrate this with respect to some parameter. The hard theorem is that all identities from before still hold. Okay. I'm still describing the target space of an invariant.
The identities are the associativity.
All blue identities. So, yes. Well, the only interesting ones are these two. The only ones that are hard are these two. Okay? But the theorem is that they still hold. So, the algebraic structure that we just defined got extended. Okay? I should say that in some sense I understand what I just did. In some other senses I don't. So, you know, overall, m to the 1/2 sort of stands for sequences in elements in a free group, completed in some way. Okay? What the wheels stand for, I don't know. So maybe somebody here at some point will tell you. I should add that there is one extra operation. So if you have two elements, or is there a binary operation? If you have a sequence of trees and a linear combination of wheels, and another sequence of trees and a linear combination of wheels, and suppose the labels here are disjoint from the labels here, you can combine the sequences and add the series of wheels. This also satisfies some properties relative to the previous operations, but they're all trivials, and I don't want to state what they are. Let me declare that a thing that has operations tm, hm, and tha, and merge, which satisfies all the blue identities and the ones I didn't specify, let me declare such a thing to be called a metagroup action. And now let me tell you about another one. Okay? So forget everything I just told you. And what? Easily done. And now let's spend 15 minutes on topology. Okay? So here's topology. So given two finite sets T and H, let me talk about KBH of T and H, which is the set of all knotted balloons and hoops colored by T and H, and ribbon is a technical condition which I will not describe. Okay? So, what's a KBH? A KBH, well, the parameter space for a KBH is when you take T balloons, so balloons labeled by the elements of T. These are just two spheres, and you know, balloons also have a string, and all balloons are connected to the same base point, which sometimes I will conveniently choose to be infinity. Okay? And you also take H hoops. So hoops are one-dimensional circles, and they're also connected by strings to the base point at infinity. Well, sometimes at infinity. So this is the parameter space. Now look at all possible ways of embedding such gadgets. I should have said that the hoops are oriented, and so are the balloons. But I mean, forget things like that. So let's look at the space of all embeddings of such things. Well, ribbon embeddings, to be precise, into either R4 or S4. So these are essentially two-dimensional knots in four-dimensional space, along also with one-dimensional things. Okay? So let me give you a few examples. Well, the stupidest example is epsilon x. So epsilon x is the unknotted hoop. So it goes from minus infinity to infinity. It does nothing interesting. The next example is what I will call epsilon u, and it's the unknotted balloon. And again, it's completely trivial. It's the unknotted balloon in R4. But let me tell you how to read this picture. what I drew here is not a balloon, but a tennis racket. Okay? So the tennis racket is embedded in R3. I draw my things in R3. Well, I actually draw them in the plane, but you should interpret them in R3. And then you take the membrane of the tennis racket, and it's a disk, and then what you do is you split it into two parallel copies, you push one up and one down in the fourth dimension. So you cannot see it here. To R3, they project as being the same, but it's actually blown up to a balloon in R4. Okay, so that's epsilon u. And, well, that's the second example. Now let's go for the next example. This example is already noted. This example is sort of the Hopfling in R4. So it has one balloon and one hoop which goes through it. And as a picture in R3, it has a singularity. As a picture in R3, the hoop meets the balloon. But in R4, the two membranes that make up the balloon got pushed to the fourth coordinate, so there is no singularity in R4, and this is a genuine four-dimensional knot. There is some sense in which this is the positive Hopfling, and there is also the negative Hopfling, which in which the kind of hoop penetrates the membrane the other way. That's the only difference. Okay? Well, I didn't yet tell you what operations exist on knotted balloons and hoops, but later I will tell you that there are operations, and these turn out to be the generators. They generate everything. Everything can be generated by applying iterated application of the operations on these generators. But what I want to tell you next, I want to give you an even more sophisticated example. So here is an element of KBH with two balloons and two hoops. Here are the balloons. So one balloon is this sort of sausage, and the other balloon is this even more complicated vegetarian sausage. The two hoops are, well, here is this hoop, it's going from infinity back to infinity, and the other hoop is this one. And when you look at this picture, you note several things. First of all, I didn't even bother to specify the sense of this crossing because it doesn't matter. One-dimensional things in R4, well, this, in R4, this is equal to that. Okay? So it just doesn't matter in which, so I didn't bother to specify. Yet the hoops are non-trivial because the hoops can be knotted with the balloons. And indeed, here is a point where a hoop is knotted with a balloon. Next point to make, well, actually, here, the sense of the crossing also doesn't matter, because here you have a line and a tube, right? This particular part of the balloon blows up to a tube. But the line is behind the tube or above the tube, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, I could have specified it the other way around, and it would be the same. Well, okay, I didn't bother. Next thing to note, how to interpret these bits. So here, the wider thing, or maybe I should say that my convention is that when I push things in the fourth dimension, I push them to a distance which is proportional to the distance from the boundary. So things sort of, in the middle gets pushed farther away. So basically, since this tube is narrower, since this band is narrower than this band, it gets pushed less. So therefore, even though it appears as if there is a line of singularities here, there actually isn't. So this is non-singular. Another observation, I could pull this thing out. Okay, so this is not in the simplest possible form way. Maybe you could simplify this knot a bit. Fine. However, I could not pull this thing out. It gets stuck. Okay? Okay, and one last thing, this particular KBH is in the image of a map delta whose domain is three-dimensional tangles. So a tangle is a piece of a knot. Basically, take a disk in the plane and then draw what... you know what, later could be completed to a knot if you add stuff on the outside, but don't add the outside. Okay, so that's what a tangle is. And there is a map delta from three-dimensional tangles into KBHs. I think that picture explains the map. Basically, near any tail you put of a tangle, you put a local configuration like here. Near every head, you put a local configuration like here. And near every crossing, you put a local configuration like here, which involves a parallel pair of one balloon and one hoop, and one band. Okay?
So this is a map from sort of diagrams to diagrams.
It's a map from diagrams to diagrams, and I claim that all the moves are satisfied. All the usual, so basically the move, the map is defined on crossings, so crossings go to things like that, where the understrand strand is the narrower band.
Maybe you're going to object, but when I had this guy on top of here before, it gave me something which couldn't be pulled through because the short guy was fatter. On the other way round, the short guy would have been thinner and I would have been able to pull it through.
Locally, the map is defined, the map sort of maps one-dimensional strands, these two one-dimensional strands, to, well, a tube and another tube.
Okay.
Only globally,
the tubes are
only at the ends of the strands, I add caps or sometimes caps that are connected to the outside
The tangle's implicitly in a ball and the free points are sort of attached to the boundary and I can't move those, is that right?
Yes. In ordinary knot theory, sort of these things are considered modulo deformations in which you do not touch the endpoints, modulo the boundary. Anyway, so delta basically maps a crossing to a gadget like this, in which the lower strand is the narrower band. And you can check that it satisfies the usual Rademeister moves. Also, in fact, you can extend it to tangles that have so-called virtual crossings. So a virtual crossing is a crossing in which you didn't specify which one is over and which one is under. And they just get mapped to things like that, in which the two bands are sort of one behind the other rather than one through the other. And it doesn't matter which one is above and which one is under, as I indicated before. And then this map delta satisfies the usual Rademeister moves, the Rademeister moves for the virtual crossings as well, a detour move which I will not list, and also, well, this lovely picture, overcrossings commute, so two crossings that go over a virtual one can be slid to the other side, and sort of the nicest part of the picture is here. But there is some broken symmetry. Some symmetry is broken here, because if you flip this thing to be under, then you cannot do this move, because if you sort of try to push the narrower band through a virtual crossing, well, it gets sort of twisted around. Okay, the main point here.
You can't pull something behind a virtual crossing.
Right, but you can put something above a virtual crossing.
So virtual crossing, I think of it as something hanging off the bottom of a sharp thing.
Maybe. Some people call them welded crossings because they're sort of welded to the back of the image. Okay? So I should say that delta injects standard knots into, U means usual knots, into KBH, and most likely it injects all tangles, but I never verified it. I should also say that delta, if you allow virtual crossings, delta is essentially surjective, meaning you if you also allow punctures and cuts, so if you also allow deleting a component, then it becomes surjective, and the kernel is conjectured to be exactly what's written here, but it's an open problem which somebody should solve. Okay. Anyway. In a way, delta was an aside, but it was an aside to tell you that knot theory embeds into the story, ordinary knot theory embeds into the story that I'm just about to tell you, okay? But let's go back to the story I'm about to tell you. Well, I want to tell you that there are operations on KBHs. And, well, what are the operations? So first of all, there is a connected, well, there are punctures and cuts, which I don't want to say anything about. Then there is connected sums. So if you have two KBHs, these could be noted, I just didn't indicate it. If you have two KBHs, you can take their connected sum, which just means join them along the common point, the base point, okay? For this to make sense, the set of labels here and the set of labels here, the sets of labels should be disjoint, otherwise you wouldn't know how to label the end result, okay? But then comes the interesting step, the interesting operations. So the interesting operations sort of come from algebraic topology. So in algebraic topology, if you have a topological space X, then it has a pi 1 and a pi 2. So these are like hoops in the space, and these are like balloons in the space. And pi 1 is a group, pi 2 is a group, and pi 1 acts on pi 2. Now, this is not what I'm talking about. Okay? The space I'm talking about has trivial pi 1 and trivial pi 2, and the things I'm talking about are not... The things I'm talking about are not individual elements of pi 1s, but rather kind of linked together elements of pi 1 and pi 2. Nevertheless, a remnant of this structure remains. Namely, so if you have a KBH like this one, let's call it K, with labels U, V, and X, and Y, and maybe some further labels that are not participating, that I'm not showing. Now, I'm drawing it as if it is not noted, but it could be noted. I'm just not bothering to draw it, but basically these X and Ys and U's and V's could be noted with each other. Okay? Then there are operations. The operations are, well, there is the head multiply operation, in which is like the multiplication in pi 1, in which you take two hoops, and you trace along one, and then you trace along the other, you get something that looks like that, and you call the result, if the two hoops were called X and Y, you call the result Z, and this is the head multiply of X and Y into Z. Again, it's a unary operation. It is not defined on pairs of things, but on an individual thing, a single thing that has two components called X and Y. Likewise, there is the tail multiply operation, which is parallel to multiplication in pi 2. So if you have two balloons, U and V, you can merge them as pictured and call the result W. And finally, there is a tail by head action of a head X on a balloon, of a hoop X on a balloon U. And it goes by rerouting the string of the balloon U along the hoop X. The picture shows it. This is essentially the action of pi 1 and pi 2. Okay? The reason there is a red heart balloon here is because I'm an immature, infantile baby. Okay? But the other reason is that sort of, this sort of indicates two of the operations, right? One of the operations is to put the two lobes of the balloon on two previous balloons and get the sort of tail multiply. And the other operation is what you do when you give the balloon to a baby. You just tie the string, right? You tie the neck of the balloon. That's essentially what this operation does. Okay? Now, properties. It's very easy to check that this is, sorry, the head multiply is meta-associative in the sense that is written here, which is the same as the sense of before. Tail multiply is meta-associative, and the head on tail action, again, it's not a group action, but it satisfies this remnant of a group action axiom. Okay? Any questions? Any comments? How am I doing? 40 minutes. That's about 15 plus 15. That's fine. Okay. Maybe one more word. These operations allow you to reconstruct the operations that happen in tangles. So if you have a tangle, just an ordinary tangle in R3, well, tangles have some operations too. And basically, you can put two tangles side by side. Now it's a single more complicated tangle with two pieces. And then you can glue one strand to another strand, one strand of the tangle to another strand of the same tangle. Okay? And by repeatedly doing this, you can construct an arbitrary complicated knot. So my claim is that this operation of gluing a strand to another one in ordinary tangle theory is expressible using these operations. And in fact, it sort of says more or less like the semi-direct product of pi 1 and pi 2. It's the meta version of semi-direct product. Okay? So, namely, if you have a tangle with component A and component B, I drew them side by side, but they really could have been knotted with each other. You could apply the tangle concatenation operation, which produces a single long strand called C, which will be doubly knotted. Okay? I mean, you know, it will contain whatever knottedness these two had. Okay? You could apply delta here and schematically you'll get this picture. You could apply delta here and schematically you get this picture. And I claim that there is an operation double multiply of A and B into C, which completes the square into a commutative square, where double multiply is you first act on the head B, sorry, on the tail A by the head B, then you do tail multiply of the two heads and tails, then you do head multiply. So it's like a semi-direct product. So therefore, if I completely describe the operations I told you about, then I've also completely described ordinary knot theory within that world. And then the moral is, the moral is, if I wanted to construct an m-valued invariant, m is the algebra half of the talk, zeta of tangles, and most likely also an invariant of knotted balloons and hoops, this depends on the conjecture I mentioned before, then all I need to do is to declare zeta on the generators and verify that all relations are satisfied. Here is the declaration of zeta on the generators. Okay? So, you map the trivial thing to zero, essentially, and you map the Hopflink to, so the Hopflink with a head X and tail U, to the Lie element, the single Lie element labeled X, but whose tail is U. And, well, the negative Hopflink goes to the negative. And then there is a theorem that, all relations are satisfied. Namely, this really is an invariant. Now, why do I care about this invariant? Are you still with me? Is this okay?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So why do I care about this invariant? So the first reason is that it's not an arbitrary invariant. It's it has a definition in terms of a universal property. It has a universal property. And in fact, it's the unique homomorphic universal finite type invariant on KBH. I'm not sure I want to define it in full. I'm not sure I want to explain it in full, but let me roughly tell you what it is. So, on any algebraic structure, any algebraic structure that has a binary operation, any means there are so many such things. I mean, it's like a huge, I'm not talking about just a narrow thing, I'm talking about a very, very wide thing. So, you know, groups have a binary operation. Metagroups have a binary operation. Sorry, the meta thing that I talked about just before, well, the binary operation was the connected sum. They also have unary operations, and I spent most of the time on the unary operations, but they also have a binary operation. Categories have a binary operation, the composition of morphisms. Planar algebras have lots of binary operations. Circuit algebras, if you know what they are. There are lots of things that have binary operations. Whenever you have an algebraic structure with a binary operation, first of all, you can extend it to linear combinations. So you can allow free linear combinations of elements in the structure. So if you do it to a group, you get a group ring. If you do it to a category, you just allow adding of morphisms. Then you can extend all operations to be linear or multilinear, depending if they're unary or binary or more. Okay? Then you can look at the so-called augmentation ideal. The augmentation ideal will be that part of the structure which is generated by differences. So for a group, it's the ordinary augmentation ideal of the group ring. But it makes sense in a vastly more general context. Now, it's always an ideal. So you can always take its powers using the binary, using all the operations you have. Again, you have to be careful about what it means, but there is a canonical source. There's only one way to make sense of what I just said. So you can always look at the powers of the augmentation ideal, and they always define the filtration. So basically, every algebraic structure is automatically filtered. Every category, every metagroup, every group is automatically filtered once you allow linear combinations. Once you have a filtered thing, you can look for, so whenever you have a filtered object, it also, if K is filtered, you can also look at its associated graded. And then you can look for morphisms from K to Goethe, which respect the filtration and satisfy a certain universality property, which I will not mention, but which takes about 1 second to mention. Let's mention it. Basically, I want Gur Z, which will go from Gur K to Gur Gur K, which is also equal to Gur K, to be the identity. Not just an isomorphism, to be the identity. Furthermore, you can look for Zs which respect all the operations, okay, that are homomorphic. So let me call such a Z, either a universal finite type invariant or a universal expansion. Now, such a Z may or may not exist. Okay? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. For braids, it exists. It exists. For various, sometimes it exists, sometimes it doesn't. And the theorem is that this zeta is, well, it's actually the logarithm of, but it contains the same amount of information as the unique homomorphic universal finite type invariant on the structure I started from. So it solves the universal problem, which makes sense in a vastly more general context. And in fact, everything that I will tell you later, not everything, but many of the things that I will tell you later, apply in many of the other avatars of this concept. Avatar, is this the correct language? In many of the other places in which this kind of theorem makes sense. So really what I'm telling you about, what I will tell you about in the next few minutes, is somehow a pattern which gets repeated in multiply, in a larger, a very large context, very large number of places. Okay, so that's the tip of an iceberg. So a little bit more about this iceberg is, well, there is a paper in progress which I'm writing with Jojana Dancho, the URL is here. So by the way, WEB, the combination, is defined somewhere at the head of the handout. Okay? So, omega, epsilon, beta, I mean, sorry. So, And here are a few other handouts of talks that I've given in the past about other occurrences of the same pattern. Obviously, I cannot go into it. Okay? So that's one comment. Next comment. Actually, unlike several of the other instances, one reason I particularly like this particular instance of this general pattern is that it's entirely computable. So to prove my point, take the Borromean tangle, map it into KBH, and here is the result of the result of the computation of the invariant. This is the tree part, except I restricted my attention to red heads. First of all, because I'm childish, but secondly, because the other heads are obtained from this by cyclically permuting the colors. And here is the wheel part.
When you say computable, do you mean polynomial time?
No. I mean, okay, polynomial time for each fixed degree.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this is done up to degree 5.
Yeah,
I can actually do it up to degree about 10. And on my website, you can actually find the output up to degree 10 or
but,
so.
But each, but truncating at a given degree is still an invariant. It's just not a not
truncating
universal.
It, it's still an invariant. It's completely new. So this is an invariant. This picture is an invariant of the tangle here. Okay? But the computation grows exponentially. Now, so really what I mean by computable is not so much the complexity of the computation, but the complexity of the program.
Yeah, right.
Namely, there are other invariants that are in principle computable, but very, very, very hard to implement.
Sure.
Here, it's just a matter of implementing these very simple-minded operations, and it turns out to be really simple-minded, and, you know, I really mean computable. It's not theoretically computable. It's real-life computable with real numbers, you know.
How can you distinguish it?
Not excellent. Not very good. I'll say a bit more about it. The reason to care from this person, the reason, well, not very good. It's in fact, okay. The trees part is equivalent to the collection of all Milner invariants of that tangle. The wheels part, the only things I can say is that it contains the Alexander polynomial and the multivariable Alexander polynomial when restricted to link to tangles and closed to links. It may contain more, but I have no, I don't know. Okay? Okay. In fact, the trees part is the Milner linking numbers, if you know what they are, and all that it is a relatively nice way of computing them. Okay.
I mean, this is a non-obviously different way of computing those invariants.
No, it's more or less obviously the Milner linking numbers. But as I said, the sort of the novelty is in the wheels, not in the trees. Okay. Next thing.
Why do you have the trees at all then, or is it? Can you?
Because without the trees, you cannot compute the wheels.
Okay.
So the algebraic structure on the algebra, the 15 minutes of algebra, in order to compute the wheels, you first have to have the trees. Okay?
Sure. I'm confused about a little point. The way I understand the Milner invariant, you need to have, when you have vanishing up to a certain point, that's when the next ones are defined. But here you're defining the whole tree thing.
Because here I'm talking about tangles, not about links. So for tangles, the Milner linking numbers are defined everywhere, and these are Z's, the coefficients of these trees, and for links, some remain defined and some don't, or some combinations remain defined, some are conditionally defined. However, if you close this thing to a link, it will always have an Alexander polynomial, and the Alexander polynomial will always be readable from the wheels part. And same for the multivariable Alexander polynomial. Okay. I don't have much time, so I'll have to be very, very brief. So very, very briefly, so you see, trees can be interpreted as, well, if you fix a finite dimensionally algebra, a tree can be interpreted as a function from some power of that Lie algebra to itself. Namely, you take three elements of the original Lie algebra, a red element, a green element, and a blue element. You put the red ones here, you put the green ones at the green spots, you put the blue ones at the blue spots, and then the tree tells you how to bracket them. So trees correspond to functions from the Frehley algebra. So any tree, any element of the Frehley algebra, sorry, becomes a function from some sum of a finite dimensional algebra to the finite dimensional algebra. Likewise, wheels, well, wheels are like traced trees. So they become functions into the ground ring. Altogether, you can construct a functional which I will call e to the tau. So given a Lie algebra, you can construct a functional called e to the tau from M to H to functions on that original Lie algebra with values in some whatever. It doesn't matter. Okay? The point is that, the next point is that given a finite dimensional Lie algebra, there is a certain way of constructing, of writing a quantum field theory, and conjecturally, e to the tau composed with zeta, the invariant, is a complete evaluation of this quantum field theory. Again, I'm sort of just giving you tastes of the taste of several directions. Similar conjectures or theorems hold in several of the other variants of this story. Okay? Next bit is, well, okay, the moment, okay, the next bit is that, as was stated before, trees and wheels are still exponential size. But there are many quotients of the space of trees and wheels which become polynomial size. And in fact, one particularly lovely quotient is what I will call the beta quotient, and I don't have much time to tell you about it, except to tell that it is sort of summarized by this relation. You replace a bracket by a wheel, by two combinations of a wheel and an arc, and you can this way reduce all, peel all the brackets away, and you're left only with one wheels at the end, with only combinations of one wheels with one thing, blobs, okay? And that's a commutative, it's a space describable by polynomials, or rather power series. You look at this space, and it turns out that all operations become describable by formulas, closed form formulas that are true to all orders, to all degrees. So, I mean, but they involve things like the exponential of a one wheel. Okay, so you get messy formulas, but they work to all orders. Then you look at these messy formulas, and you find that there are various patterns that repeat in them. So e to the c minus 1 divided by c occurs many times, so you kind of renormalize it away, and everything gets replaced by simpler formulas. And again, I don't have time to explain these formulas, but let me just tell you that they involve only rational functions in a certain variable. In fact, in a certain different version, they involve only polynomials. And all the operations are very simple-minded rational combinations of rational functions. So this is actually polynomial time computable. Okay? And why am I happy about this particular quotient? Well, it's I should say it contains the Alexander polynomial, okay? And in some way, it's the most computable version of the Alexander polynomial that I'm aware of. So let me explain. Standard definitions of the Alexander polynomial involve, you look at your knot, and you write a certain n by n matrix. And writing the matrix takes a linear amount of time, I think. The matrix is completely trivial. And then you take its determinant. Computing the determinant takes n cubed amount of time. But the worst thing about it is that when you compute the determinant, you do, well, I mean, you can compute it by summing over all permutations, and then it takes an exponential amount of time. But the other way is to do a row and column operations. But when you do row and column operations to this matrix, it loses its identity. You don't know what it is. The matrices you see in between have nothing to do with the original topology of the knot. Now, if you follow the algorithm I sort of described, in the beta quotient for an arbitrary knot. So basically you produce the crossings one by one, then you concatenate the edges, and this really means three operations each, not just one, because it means a head and tail action, and then a tail multiply, and then a head multiply. But anyway, you reduce the computation. You essentially build 3n stepping stones within the computation, in which when you do each of these, you are computing the invariant of an actual topological thing. So you've divided the lengthy n cube time computation to n pieces, and at the end of each piece, you are computing the invariant of, you're actually computing the genuine invariant of something topological. Okay? Why is this good? And the overall length of the computation remains n cubed. So why is this good? So if you look for a computable algebraic computation of the categorification of the Alexander polynomial, that's an extremely good thing to have. So I'm already a minute and 15 seconds late, but very, very roughly, a categorification of an invariant is to be able to answer the question, well, so you get an invariant, the coefficient, the Alexander polynomial, the coefficient of x to the 7, sorry, of x cubed is 7. To categorify the invariant is to be able to say which 7 it is. Okay? And again, I'm very, very loose, because really it's which in some fancy sense. But still, it's to be able to say 7 of what is this 7, which appears as a coefficient. Now, for the Alexander polynomial, it's very hard to do, algebraically at least, because part of the computation of the Alexander polynomial involves computing a determinant, and if you have a determinant, it's very hard to trace. So suppose you knew what this thing meant, and you knew what this thing meant, and you knew what this thing meant, it's very hard to say what exactly the determinant measures in terms of the original things that appeared in it. So basically what I'm giving you is 3n stepping stones, inside each of which the coefficients, the numbers that occur, could and maybe should have a meaning. So I'll stop here. I mean, there is a lot more to say. This really is the tip of an iceberg, but I'll stop here. So, thank you. Sorry, I stopped too early. This is propaganda. Okay.
And then, question?
Yeah, is this the Alexander invariant of the tangle that you're talking about, or of the knotted balloon hoop in four space?
So, well, one particular case of a tangle is a knot. So, in fact, knots are equivalent to long knots. You can cut them open. And then there are tangles with two ends. So, I mean, ignoring the multivariable Alexander polynomial, let's talk about the standard Alexander polynomial. So, a knot is a tangle, and a tangle becomes a KBH, and the zeta invariant of a KBH, reduced modulo the beta relations, is the Alexander polynomial.
Of the knot.
Of the original knot.
Not of the two series.
Within the computation of that, presumably also of the two-sphere, but I don't want to say it. Okay? But within the computations, the intermediate steps that you see are KBHs that have several balloons and several hoops. And the invariants that you see there are, I'm I'm not sure it makes sense to they have sort of well, some mixtures or disinvariant. I don't know what else to say. Okay. Yeah, I mean they're not. You see things in between. You see things for which the question is this the Alexander polynomial doesn't make sense. In some sense, the point is that you've extended the Alexander polynomial to a bigger range, in which it doesn't, so that it does make sense on the intermediate steps.
The intermediate steps are still knotted balloons and hoops.
Yes, they're always knotted balloons and hoops.
So I could cut them out and take the associated covering space and ask what the action is.
But they're also balloons. But then you have multiple balloons, not a single balloon. Yes. So there is a multivariable. First of all, it's multivariable, and secondly, you have to keep track of the hoops, which are like elements of the fundamental group of the complement. Okay. I should say that the beta quotient. So, I mean the. This part is extremely similar to what appears in papers by Ladinette, Simasoni and Turayev, and Kirk and Livingstone, in which they give sort of Rademeister torsion versions of some, or inspired constructions of some invariant of triangles, though I think they it doesn't quite assemble together in the same way. It's very, very similar, but how exactly similar I cannot comment. And it's done entirely three-dimensionally, not four-dimensional. There isn't the four-dimensional side.
I mean, are there sort of topological reasons why this story makes more sense in four dimensions, or is that somehow just bookkeeping?
I don't understand the... So, okay, several comments, okay? First of all, the tree part, I fully understand. It's Milner invariants, and in fact, the wheels part I don't understand.
Perfect.
I mean, I only understand it algebraically. And I came to it as a universal solution to an algebraic, to this Gur problem, which I mentioned before. But, it's definitely somehow distinguished. It's this universal solution of something, but I completely don't understand it topologically.
Okay,
so I somehow can, by definition, cannot answer your question.
So, but then that's part of your interest is to find an interpretation.
Oh yeah, I would love to have an interpretation of all of this, of, again, the wheels part of this. Now, the other thing I should say is that KBHs are equivalent to the fundamental group of, where was it? KBHs are equivalent to the fundamental groups of their complements. So, several things. First of all, I did it in four dimensions, but everything could have been lifted to an even higher dimension. And second, so the balloons define a fundamental group, and the hoops are elements in that fundamental group. And in fact, you could. What did I want to say? Oh, and in fact, you could sort of describe the groups that are obtained. The groups that are obtained in this way are so-called, well, Loft groups. So they have some presentation, whatever. There is some specific way of describing their presentations. And then really, what I'm describing to you is a set of operations between group presentations. Okay, so the whole thing is entirely group theoretical, except for several things. First of all, I don't have group theoretical interpretation to several of the things that appear in it. Second, the quantum field theory, again, I have no idea how to state it in group theory language, and maybe I should say that the quantum field theory, I didn't say anything about the ribbon condition, but the ribbon condition can be dropped on the left-hand side, on the quantum field theory side, and again, that has no analog in group theory. I don't know what this means in group theory. And also sort of all the, well, side or the all the brothers and sisters of this story, well, many of them are not group theoretical, so.
Maybe we should just thank speaking now. People want to ask questions, go talk to him.
Did you find your hyperbolic geometry?
No, I was trying to work out what
I'll tell you later.
Okay.